Most anyone who has ever studied the Bible to any degree at all is probably aware of the fact that Moses is an individual who has a very major and even unique role in the Bible. Not only is he the individual that God used to write the first five books of the Bible, he's also the individual that God used as his physical instrument, you know, to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. You know, he performed lots of miracles through Moses to not only get Pharaoh's attention, but to show the Israelites that, you know, Moses was representing the true God. And, you know, he's not just some crazy guy making wild claims. In fact, Moses is the instrument that leads the Israelites, you know, out of Egypt, you know, up to the Red Sea. And of course, you know, God's power parted the Red Sea, but, you know, they see Moses as the physical instrument there who's making all this happen. You know, he leads the people through the Red Sea and then all the way to Mount Sinai, where they then, you know, are able to make a covenant with God. And then after they make this formal covenant, you know, Moses is the individual who goes up to Mount Sinai and directly receives the Ten Commandment tablets, you know, directly from God and brings them back down to the people. So you can see, obviously, you know, Moses plays a very major role in the Bible, but there's another unique thing stated in the Bible about Moses. In fact, the Bible tells us a couple of times that this particular issue sets him apart from other individuals that God used in the role of a prophet. And what I'm referring to is it refers to the fact that God spoke with Moses face to face. And that this was, you know, unique in his relationship with Moses, you know, as compared to other individuals God used as a prophet. However, when you look at that particular fact, though, oftentimes this can be a head-scratcher for people who study the Bible, because they'll look at these statements and the fact it clearly repeatedly says that, you know, God spoke with Moses face-to-face, but then they turn around and read the New Testament, and they see a handful of times where the New Testament specifically states that no one has seen God, and no one in this physical life can see God and live to tell the story. Well, this, you know, seems to present a pretty major contradiction for us. Well, what we're going to do today is to dig into this subject a little more deeply to understand how should we understand this statement and how do we solve this apparent contradiction. So if you'd like a title for this sermon, it's How Did Moses Speak with God Face to Face? Again, how did Moses speak with God face to face? Because as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, there's a number of things about Moses' role that are, you know, very unique, and, you know, obviously he plays a very major role, you know, in the narrative of the Bible, and was even, again, involved in writing the first five books of the Bible. But again, as I mentioned, there's a couple of statements here that say that, you know, the fact that God spoke with Moses face to face, that this is something unique that sets him apart from other individuals that God used as in the role of a prophet. And to see this, let's turn over to Numbers chapter 12. And this is Numbers chapter 12. Now we're going to jump into the middle of a context here, but what's happening in this chapter is Moses and Aaron, you know, Moses' brother, Miriam and Aaron, I should say, Moses's, you know, is his brother and his sister, were both criticizing Moses due to a marriage that he had entered into with an Ethiopian woman. Well, God's not happy about their criticism of this. And we're going to jump into the context here where God's basically calling them aside to chastise them, you know, because he's not happy with their behavior. But let's notice how he describes his relationship with Moses, because, you know, he very much says here that this is a unique relationship that he has with Moses. And we'll start here in verse 4 of chapter 12. It says, "Suddenly Jehovah said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, 'Come out, you three, to the tabernacle of meeting.' So the three came out. And then Jehovah came down in a pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called in Aaron and Miriam. And they both went forward. And then he said, 'Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, Jehovah, make myself known to him in a vision, and I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of Jehovah. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And now notice he states here, he speaks with him face to face, and he says, this is, you know, different than how he works with, you know, all the others that he has used in the role of a prophet. Now, we're going to come back to these verses later in this sermon and dig into this a little more deeply, because if we notice the contrasts that are made here in these verses, it gives us, you know, some real insight as to what exactly is meant by this phrase face-to-face, because we're going to see that that's the key to understanding what appears like major contradictions here. But at this point, just notice that, again, God is directly saying this is something unique that sets Moses apart from others. In fact, it's something unique that separates him from all the other individuals that God has used in the role of a prophet. Well, this is stated again at the end of the book of Deuteronomy. So if you turn over to Deuteronomy 34, well, notice a very similar statement. And again, what's happening here in the context, because we're going to jump into kind of the middle of the chapter here, but this is kind of wrapping up at the very end of Moses' life, you know, where Moses dies, and basically, you know, the baton of you know, the leadership of Israel, you know, gets passed from Moses on to Joshua, and that's basically what's happening in this chapter. But as we read through this, we'll see once again it describes this unique relationship, you know, that God had with Moses that set him apart from other individuals that were ever in the role of a prophet. And let's pick up here in verse 8. It says, "And the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. So the days of weeping and mourning for Moses ended. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. So the children of Israel heeded him and did as Jehovah had commanded Moses. But since then, there has not arisen in Israel a prophet like Moses, whom Jehovah knew face to face. In all signs and wonders which Jehovah sent him to do in the land of Egypt, before Pharaoh, before all the servants and in all this land. And by all that mighty power and all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel." Again, it mentions here again, as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, lots of miracles that, you know, that God performed through Moses to get, you know, not only attention of the Israelites, but of, you know, Pharaoh and of the Egyptians as well, you know, making it very clear that, you know, the true God was working through him. But again, we see this statement of, you know, this relationship of speaking with God face to face, you know, this is something unique to Moses that sets him apart from all the other prophets. But again, as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, this is oftentimes a head scratcher because people see this, you know, he spoke with him face to face, but yet there's also numerous statements in the New Testament, you know, written, you know, hundreds of years after, you know, these accounts took place that say no one has ever seen God. And so let's take a look at that, and then we'll dig into how do we solve what appears like a contradiction here. So just to notice some of these statements, turn over to John chapter 1. It's John chapter 1, and we're going to pick up here in verse 18. It says, "No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him." I notice, obviously, when it's referring to God, it's obviously referring to the Father because it's contrasting him with Christ. You know, so obviously both are being spoken about, but the individual referred to as God, that's obviously the Father. You know, and it's saying that no one has seen him. And this isn't the only time that this is stated in the New Testament. There are multiple statements like this. And to notice some others, let's turn over to John chapter 6. John chapter 6, and we'll pick up in verse 45. It says, "It is written in the prophets, and they shall all be taught by God. Therefore, everyone who has heard and learned from the Father comes to me. Not that anyone has seen the Father, except he who is from God, he has seen the Father. You know, so obviously Christ is saying, you know, no other physical human being has seen the Father, but I have. You know, I've been in heaven, I've seen the Father, but other physical human beings have not really seen the Father. Now, this is mentioned again in 1 John. So you turn up to 1 John. This is the first of John's three epistles. And if we turn to 1 John 4, we'll see again a very similar statement. And this is in 1 John 4 and verse 12. No one has seen God at any time. If we love one another, God abides in us, and his love has been perfected in us. So you can see that it's made very clear with multiple statements, no physical human being has seen God. Well, then how do we solve this issue? Because we have here that, you know, it says Moses talked to God face to face, but yet we have these statements that says, well, no one has seen God. Now, we'll dig into this a little more detail as we get a little further into this sermon. But just to kind of give you a preview of where we're going, the key here is understanding what the Bible means and when it refers to face to face. You know, because when we use the term face to face in our, you know, modern day vernacular in English, what we're specifically referring to is two individuals, you know, that are directly meeting in front of each other who are able to look into the whites of each other's eyes. You know, we're not just referring to them having a direct conversation with each other. We can do that over the phone. You know, with modern technology today, if you got a good cell phone connection, you know, person can be on the other side of the world. You know, and even if you've got a good connection, well, then you can have an interactive, you know, real-time, two-way conversation, but we don't describe that as face-to-face. You know, when we say face-to-face in English, we mean we're basically looking into the whites of each other's eyes. And we'll see later as we go through this sermon that understanding what the Bible is really saying, you know, there is the key to understanding this. But let's first of all just look at some of the ways that people sometimes try to solve this, what appears to be a major contradiction. Now, a doctrine that I was taught growing up in the Church of God that was, you know, kind of an earnest attempt to try to solve this contradiction, but where, as we're going to see here, was a misguided attempt to do that, was a doctrine that was oftentimes referred to as the God of the Old Testament. Now, what this doctrine referred to, it was the idea that when you read any account in the Old Testament and you see a God being interacting with a human being, you know, particularly like with Moses, you know, where it says, you know, he talked face to face. Well, the assumption was, well, it can't be God the Father. You know, it's got to be just Jesus Christ it's referring to here. And he backed that up by flipping to the scriptures I just read and say, well, see, no one has ever seen God the Father, so Moses couldn't have been talking to him. You know, it's got to be Jesus Christ. Well, there's a problem when you start trying to make that doctrine work with all of Scripture. Because what you'll find is, you know, is to make that doctrine work, what you have to assume is that the Father, he doesn't have a name unique to himself. And he doesn't really have titles unique to himself. Now, we look at Jesus Christ and say, well, yeah, well, obviously, you know, he has a name that, you know, specifically differentiates him from the Father and others. He has a number of titles, you know, that specifically describe his role, you know, unique to the role that he fulfills, different from the Father. But then you have to look at the Father and go, well, no, his name is kind of a community name. It refers to either one of them, and you just kind of slot in whoever you want to see. And then you got to take most all of his titles and do the same thing with them. The reason being is if you're consistent with his name or you're consistent with the titles, well, then this idea that, well, you know, if a human being is interacting with a God being in the Old Testament, you know, that's always Christ. Well, that quickly falls apart because you start following these titles and you see numerous times where they're clearly referring to the Father. You know, and even in the New Testament, where these titles are being contrasted with Christ, and it's very clearly that they're uniquely referring to the Father, but then you'll see these titles in the Old Testament interacting with human beings and talking to them. And then the whole idea falls apart. So just to see a good example of this, turn over to Exodus chapter 3. This is Exodus chapter 3. This is the burning bush account when God first, appears to Moses and, tells him he's got a job for him to do, to go lead the Israelites, out of slavery in Egypt and, take them to Mount Sinai to make a covenant with God. And, the purpose is to lead them into the promised land. Well, let's read through this account and notice when God refers to his name, and notice particularly the titles that are ascribed to him. Because we're going to see here in a minute, you can turn over to the book of Acts and follow these same titles, and they're very clearly uniquely referring to the Father. So we have to conclude, to be consistent, that who Moses is talking to here is the Father. But let's notice here in Exodus 3 and verse 13. And then Moses said to God, "Indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they say to me, 'What is his name?' What shall I say to them?" Now notice he just said, "The God of your fathers." Now we're going to see that is a title that's consistently used here. And then we're going to see in the book of Acts here in just a minute who that title is attributed to. But then pick up in verse 14. And God said to Moses, "I am who I am." And he said, "Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, 'I am has sent me to you.'" Now notice he didn't say, "I am is his name." He's I've covered this in other sermons, and there's a study paper on my website called "The Name of the Lord" that'll go into this in more detail. But in verse 14, he's giving him the meaning of his name. But notice here, if we get to read down a little bit further in verse 15, he's going to state what his name is. In verse 15, "Moreover, God said to Moses, 'Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, Jehovah, God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial to all generations.'" Now, again, if you read this in English in most translations, you're going to see the word "Lord," L-O-R-D, in all caps. If you notice, when I typically read it in sermons, I'll pronounce that as Jehovah, because that's the Hebrew word there, and that separates "Lord" in all caps from "Lord," just capital L and then small O-R-D, which is typically Adonai, in Hebrew. It just the way they've done it in English really confuses the subject. But notice he says, this is my name." Now, if you do a study on this subject, and again, there's a study paper on the website that'll go into that in a lot more detail, than I'm going to have time to cover today. But you'll notice whenever the Bible refers to, "my name is" or "his name is," it's always going to have, in English, "Lord" in all caps or "Jehovah," either just that word or that word with like this, "God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob," basically Jehovah with additional words or titles added onto it. But also take note of the fact that never in the Bible do you ever see it where it's talking about, "Lord" in all caps or "Jehovah," where it says "our name is" or "their name is." It's never plural pronouns. It's always "my name is" or "his name is," because it's the name of one individual. That's why it's always singular. It's a unique name. But also, again, notice those titles, the God of our fathers, and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because that's going to be significant here in a minute. But just pick up in verse 16 to follow this through. It says, "Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, 'Jehovah, God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, appeared to me, saying, I have surely visited you and seen what is done to you in Egypt. And I have said, I will bring you up out of affliction, out of Egypt, and the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and the land flowing with milk and honey.'" And notice also he's talking about how I'm going to take you out of Egypt. Now you'll notice in the Mount Sinai, exchange where God is giving the Ten Commandments there in chapter 20, he identifies himself as Jehovah, the God who brought you out of Egypt. That's how he identifies himself. And that's repeatedly referred to throughout the Bible, the God who brought you out of Egypt. But now, as I mentioned previously, you know, notice these titles, the God of your fathers, you know, the God of our fathers, and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, let's turn over to Acts chapter 3, and we'll see very clearly who these titles are attributed to. And we're going to see a number of examples here where we just can't get confused, because it's going to be verses where it's contrasting this with Christ. So we can't get confused. It's going to be painfully obvious we're referring to the Father. And this is in Acts chapter 3. And we'll pick up in verse 13. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of our fathers, glorified his servant Jesus, of whom you delivered up and denied in the presence of Pilate, then when he was determined to let him go. But you denied the Holy One and the just, and asked for a murderer to be granted to you, and killed the Prince of Life, whom God raised from the dead, of whom we are witnesses. Now notice here that Christ is the servant of the God of our fathers and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the God of our fathers is the one who raised Christ from the dead. Obviously, these titles apply to the Father, and it's contrasting him with Christ, so we just can't get confused. You know, there's no mental gymnastics we can do to try to make this generic and say it's referring to both of them. No, Christ didn't raise himself from the dead. He was dead, and the Father raised him, you know, from the dead. Now jump over to verse 25 of Acts 3. Said, you are sons of the prophets and of the covenant which God made with our fathers, saying to Abraham. Notice this is the God of our fathers and the God of Abraham. And in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. To you first, God having raised up his servant Jesus, sent him to bless you in turning away every one of you from your iniquities. So see, once again, we have the God of our fathers and the God of Abraham. This is referring to the Father because it's contrasting him with Christ, and we just can't get confused. So now turn over to Acts chapter 5, and we'll see this again. It's because Acts chapter 5, and we're going to pick up in verse 30. The God of our fathers raised up Jesus, whom you murdered by hanging on a tree. Him God has exalted to his right hand to be prince and savior, to give repentance to Israel and forgiveness of sins. And we are his witnesses to these things. And so also is the Holy Spirit, whom God has given to those who obey him. So once again, we have the God of our fathers being contrasted with Christ. So there's no way to mistake the God of our fathers, that's God the Father. Well, that's the God being that identified himself, you know, when he's speaking in Exodus 3 to Moses. What did he call himself? I'm the God of our fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know, and notice when he gave his name, he said, it's my name. He didn't say this is our name. You know, this is a community name I share with, you know, several individuals. No, this is my name. It's a unique name to one individual. So you can see, obviously, you know, the God being that you know Moses is interacting with, who he talked with face to face, that's the Father. But now, how do we solve this? What appears to be a major contradiction, because we read multiple verses in the New Testament that says, no one has seen the Father at any time, you know. And here we have Moses talking to him face to face. Well, how do we solve that? Well, the key is understanding, as I mentioned previously, that when the Bible uses the term face to face here, remember, the Bible was not written in English, and it was written thousands of years ago. So, you know, these accounts with Moses, this is written in Hebrew. And yes, the English translation of what Moses wrote in Hebrew comes out face to face. But in our modern day English, again, we attach a meaning to that that was not what the meaning Moses was trying to say. Because I used the example previously of, you know, we can have a telephone conversation today. And we can have a, you know, real-time, interactive, you know, conversation, you know, with even multiple people if we do a conference call. But no one would call that face-to-face because we're not in the same room with each other. You know, and more importantly, we're not looking to the whites of each other's eyes. You know, when, you know, typically when we say, I had a face-to-face meeting with someone, we mean we're looking right at each other. You know, we're looking in the whites of each other's eyes. You know, that's the meaning of what, because we typically don't use the phrase face-to-face in our modern-day English unless that's the meaning we're trying to convey. But now let's look at a couple of examples, you know, that Moses wrote himself, where it's obvious if we compare the context, that can't be what he meant, because it wouldn't make any sense. So let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 5. It's Deuteronomy chapter 5. And we'll see what's happening in this chapter. Is Moses is basically recounting the Mount Sinai covenant experience, you know, that's originally recorded in Exodus 20. He's kind of retelling that story. But let's notice here that he talks about God speaking with the Israelites face to face. That's the term he's going to use here in verse 4. But let's pick up in Deuteronomy 5 in verse 1. It says, and Moses called all Israel and said to them, hear, O Israel, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your hearing today, and you may learn and be careful to observe them. Jehovah our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. And Jehovah did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, those who are here today, all of us who are alive. Jehovah talked with you face to face on the mountain from the midst of the fire. Now again, think of this in terms of how we typically use the phrase face to face today. As I've mentioned several times already, you know, when we use that phrase, what we're typically conveying is, you know, we were standing directly in front of each other, and no, we weren't just in each other's proximity. We were looking at each other's, you know, we're right in the whites of each other's eyes. You know, we could see each other's facial expression. We saw the color of their eyes, and you know, we were looking right at them. But now let's notice in chapter 4 that Moses makes it very clear they were definitely not looking into the whites of God's eyes. In fact, they saw no form of his appearance whatsoever, but yet it's described as face to face. Let's pick up here in chapter 4 in verse 15. Says, take careful heed to yourselves, for you saw no form when Jehovah spoke to you at Horeb out of the midst of the fire. Obviously, by saying face to face, he didn't mean they were looking into the whites of each other's eyes, because they saw no visual representation of what God looked like at all. And if we just read the following verses, we'll see a very specific reason why he did this. Now pick up in verse 16. Lest you act corruptly and make for yourselves a carved image in the form of any figure, the likeness of male or female, the likeness of any beast that is on the earth, or the likeness of any winged bird that flies in the air, the likeness of anything that creeps on the ground, or the likeness of any fish that is in the water beneath the earth. And take heed, lest you lift your eyes to heaven, and when you see the sun, the moon, and the stars, and all the hosts of heaven, to feel driven to worship them and to serve them, which Jehovah your God has given to all the peoples under the whole heaven as a heritage. You see, God made a specific point of making sure they saw no visual image whatsoever, because he knew from their, you know, idolatrous background, you know, because, you know, their whole experience, you know, from prior to this, their whole lives had been spent in Egypt, you know, and in a very idol worshiping environment. I mean, you can see that just from the, you know, the famous golden calf account, you know, in Exodus 32, you know, Moses is up on the mountain longer than they're expecting. And what do you know, not long at fallen, they're making a golden image to go and worship. Well, that was their experience. You know, you make a likeness of something you see as a god, and you bow down and worship it. Well, God realized if they saw anything that they associated as the physical form of God, that's what they would do. So he made absolutely sure that they didn't see any visual representation of God whatsoever. But yet it's described as face to face. So from this example alone, we can see, obviously, when the Bible uses the phrase face to face, it's not conveying the meaning that what that means to us today in our modern English. And let's see another example of this. Turn over to Exodus 33. And again, this is specific to Moses' relationship. And again, really helps clarify for us, you know, that when God referred to him speaking to Moses face to face, Moses wasn't seeing his face either. You know, he wasn't looking into the whites of his eyes. Now, pick up here in Exodus 33 and verse 1. So Jehovah spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend, and he would return to the camp, but his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, did not depart from the tabernacle. Now notice here, it's just told us, as we've read a couple of times, you know, previously, that, you know, God spoke to Moses face to face. But let's notice, if we just notice the latter part of this chapter, what's also discussed, clearly, he was not seeing the face of God. He was not looking into the whites of God's eyes. And that's very obvious if we just pick up now in verse 17. It says, then Jehovah said to Moses, I will also do this thing that you have spoken. For you have found grace in my sight, and I have known you by name. And he said, please show me your glory. And notice Moses is asking to actually see him. And notice the response he gets. Then he said, I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of Jehovah before you, and I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. But he said, you cannot see my face, for no man shall see me and live. And Jehovah said, here is the place by me, and you shall stand on the rock. So it shall be, while my glory passes by, that I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand while I pass by. Then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen. So see, obviously, when he says he's talked to God, you know, Moses talked to God face to face, he's not referring to literally seeing his face, of seeing the whites of his eyes, because he's made it very clear, you can't see my face and live. And see, the key here is, again, understanding, as I've mentioned before, when the Bible uses this phrase face to face, it doesn't carry the same meaning that we attach to it. Now, just to dig into the Hebrew here, you know, not only in the account here in Exodus 33, but also, you know, in the account we read previously in Deuteronomy 5, when it says face to face, the word for face there is transliterated into English as paneh. It's P-A-N-E-H. It's Strong's number 6440. And the definition I'm going to give you comes from the Complete Word Study Dictionary of the Old Testament by Warren Baker and Eugene Carpenter. And they define it as, quote, a masculine plural noun meaning a face. Although the literal meaning of face is possible, most of the time this word occurs in a figurative idiomatic sense. See, and obviously, you know, from the context of the two examples we just looked at, it has to be referring to a figurative idiomatic sense. As we're going to see, it refers more to direct communication when we put all the details together. And it's not referring to literally seeing a face. Because we see, you know, Moses was directly told, you can't see my face and live. And we know from the Deuteronomy account with all the Israelites, they didn't see any visual representation whatsoever. You know, so they clearly were not seeing a face. They didn't see anything that they could associate, you know, as a visual image, because God knew they'd make an idol if they did. And to further clarify exactly what this is getting at, turn back over to Numbers chapter 12. We looked at this earlier, but we're going to dig now more into more detail. Because I mentioned before here, if we look at the contrasts, you know, in the context of the statement that's made here, you know, as God's basically scolding Miriam and Aaron, you know, and telling them about his unique relationship with Moses, let's focus not just on the phrase face-to-face, but let's notice here again what it's compared to. Because, you know, we've already seen, obviously, face-to-face doesn't carry the same meaning that we attribute to that phrase in our modern-day English. But if we look at the contrast here, it gives us a little more clear idea of what exactly is God referring to here. And this time we'll pick up in verse 6. It says, "Then he said, 'Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, Jehovah, make myself known to him in a vision, and I speak to him in a dream, not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. I speak with him face to face, even plainly and not in dark sayings. He sees the form of Jehovah. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?'" Now notice here again, it uses this term face to face, but what's the contrast here? Because that helps us clarify the real meaning of what he's getting at. It's contrasted with the fact that, you know, God says if he works with other prophets, well, he communicates with them, but it's more through dreams and through visions and through dark sayings. In other words, he doesn't have direct conversations with them. You know, it's kind of similar in terms of how we communicate with God today. Because just think of it, you know, how we as Christians today, you know, in our relationship with God, how we communicate with him. We don't sit down and have a two-way interactive conversation with him. You know, we pray to him. You know, and we have faith and believing when we pray and talk to him, well, he hears us. Well, you know, you experience through your life that, you know, God is answering your prayers, and you see that through events he works out in your life, you know, times where he, you know, inspires your thoughts or causes things to happen in conversations with other people that are, you know, things happen that are just too obvious that, you know, it's got to be a connection with the things that you prayed about. I'm sure we've all had those experiences, but it's always this indirect communication. You know, we don't have the experience where God, you know, comes and sits down next to us and we just have a chat and have a two-way conversation. You know, that's not how that works. Well, if you read through most of the accounts where, you know, God's working with prophets in the Bible, it's the same thing. They're having dreams, they're having visions. You know, he's communicating with them and he's, you know, giving them his will and instructing them of what they should, you know, should do and, you know, the messages they should deliver. But they're not sitting down having a two-way conversation like he does with Moses. Because that's what this is getting at, is it's a two-way conversation in real time. I mean, this is kind of analogous to us having a telephone conversation with someone. In other words, we're not looking into the whites of their eyes. You know, we're not able to see them and see their facial expression in the detail like if we're, you know, standing right next to each other in the same room and all the lights are on, you know, and you can see them clearly. You know, that's not what it's getting at. You know, if we're having a phone conversation with someone, you know, we can have a real-time direct communication with someone and, you know, they hear you and you hear them and, you know, it's an interactive conversation. But you're not seeing each other directly. See, this is the concept of what he's getting at. That's why he's comparing it with, you know, it's contrasted with dreams and visions and dark sayings. And again, just to also clarify, you know, the term face-to-face here. Now, the word for face here is different than, you know, what we read previously in Exodus, you know, 33 and in Deuteronomy 5. But we'll see, we're still kind of getting at the same idea here. You know, the Hebrew word here for face is peh, it's P-E-H. It's Strong's number 6310. And again, I'm going to give you the definition from Baker and Carpenter. And they define it as, quote, a masculine singular noun meaning mouth. Besides the literal meaning, this term is used as an instrument of speech and figuratively for speech itself. See, it's referring to for speech itself. Because again, the concept it's really getting at is, again, not the looking into the whites of each other's eyes of what we mean today in English when we say face-to-face. No, he's saying I have direct, interactive two-way conversations with Moses. Whereas with other prophets, you know, they pray to me and I speak to them in visions and dreams. That's the difference here. And see, this is also further clarified in Exodus 33. Let's turn back over to that account. And let's just look at a verse here we looked at previously. But there's a phrase here that really kind of sums up exactly the concept of what we're getting at here. It's Exodus 33 and verse 11. So Jehovah spoke to Moses face to face. But now notice the second half of the sentence. As a man speaks to his friend. You see, you don't speak, you don't have a conversation with your friend through dreams and visions and dark sayings. No, you have a direct two-way conversation. See, that's what he's getting at here. And that's what it means when that Moses had a relationship with God where he spoke with him face to face. It was unique in terms of all of God's interactions with the other prophets, but it doesn't violate the numerous New Testament statements that no one has ever seen God. But let's also clarify one other issue. Let's turn back over to Numbers 12, because there's another statement here that's oftentimes used as a counter argument when I explain this concept here. Because it specifically mentions here that Moses sees the form of the Lord. Well, we also have to put that in context and understand what it's talking about as well. And let's just again pick up in verse 8 this time. This is in Numbers 12. Says, I speak with him face to face, even plainly and not in dark sayings. He sees the form of Jehovah. So people say, well, see, he says he sees him here. Well, obviously this has to be Christ and it can't be the Father. Well, we've already seen here lots of problems with that. And we've already seen that, face-to-face doesn't mean what we tend to think it to mean in our modern day English. I mean, Exodus 33 makes that pretty clear. So what is he referring to here as he sees the form of the Lord? Well, let's first of all look at the Hebrew word here that's translated into English, as the form, and what that means. This word is transliterated into English as tumunah. It's T-E-M-U-N-A-H. It's Strong's number 8544. And again, the definition I'm going to read to you comes from Baker and Carpenter. It says, quote, a feminine noun meaning a likeness or a form. The main idea of this word is one of likeness or similarity. It is normally used to describe God's ban on creative images of anything that would attempt to resemble or be like him. This word can also be to describe the form or likeness of a visible image. Now, we looked at this previously, but turn back over to Deuteronomy 4. Because I'm going to show you why it's pulling out saying that, Moses was unique. He sees the form of the Lord and why that's a unique statement. Now, we read this before, but just notice here in verse 15. It says, take careful heed to yourselves, for you saw no form when Jehovah spoke to you at Horeb out of the midst of the fire. Now, the word form there, that's the same Hebrew word here. So realize, first of all, before we dig in a little further into what the examples of what this word can mean. But notice when it says, Moses, he's unique, he sees the form of the Lord. The context here is he's contrasting it, the rest of the Israelites, well, they heard a voice, coming from the mountain. They saw fire coming from the top of the mountain. They can obviously, see dramatic miracles taking place and made it obvious, the true God is here. They knew something supernatural was happening. But as we saw, previously, if you read the next several verses, it's very obvious they saw no visual representation whatsoever. And again, specifically because God knew they would make an image out of it and they would worship it as an idol if they did. See, that's the contrast of why it's unique to say that Moses sees the form of the Lord. But let's also understand that this also doesn't violate, you know, the New Testament verses that say, you know, no one has ever seen God. You know, because we saw in the Exodus 33 account, you know, what God says, well, you can't see my face, you can't really see my glory, but I'll let you see my hind parts. You know, I'll let you get a glimpse of the back, but I'm not going to let you really see me. Because, see, seeing the form of the Lord, you know, Moses actually got to see some kind of visual representation of God where the other Israelites didn't. This doesn't mean that he saw God's face in detail. And just to give you an example, that this Hebrew word can refer to, you know, a vague form that you totally can't, you know, make out the details. Just turn over to Job chapter 4. And we'll see an example here where this same Hebrew word here is used in the context, makes it very obvious. You know, it's referring to seeing a form that you don't have a clear picture of. You can't see all the finer details. You know, it's not referring to, you know, it doesn't have to mean seeing the whites of someone's eyes when you're looking at them. Now, we're breaking into a context here where when one of Job's friends, or as I like to refer to the individuals that the Bible refers to as his friends, you know, I did a sermon series on the book of Job a number of years ago. It's called a Fresh Look at the Book of Job. It's on my website and on my YouTube channel, if you want to look at that. But I went into explaining, you know, in the Hebrew meaning of friends there, it's more like his acquaintances. You know, it's not referring to guys that treated him well. You know, and the reason I mention that is, you know, Eliphaz is, you know, when one of the three individuals here that are just condemning and beating up Job here. Well, if there's an account here that we're going to break into the context of, where Eliphaz is basically describing an encounter, which is obviously a demon. You know, he's characterizing this like, you know, he got this inspired interaction, you know, with an angel. But if you read through the full account here, we're not going to read every detail of it. It's going to describe that this spirit being that he's seeing and interacting with, you know, later in this chapter, starts, you know, basically giving him a message which is a combination of truth and error, you know, because there's falsehoods that are included in that. Well, a righteous angel wouldn't do that. You know, obviously that's a tactic of Satan to mix, you know, truth with error to deceive, and that's what's happening here. But what I want you to see is how Eliphaz is describing what he saw in this encounter, and when he refers to seeing a form, you know, because the word form here is going to be the same Hebrew word, you know, that we referred to previously here. Now pick up here in verse 12 of chapter 4. It says, "Now a word was secretly brought to me, and by ear received a whisper of it, in disquieting thoughts from the visions of the night, when deep sleep falls on men. Fear came upon me, and trembling, which made all of my bones shake. And then a spirit passed before my face, and the hair on my body stood up." And notice, first of all, it's a very eerie description here. "And it stood, and I could not discern its appearance. A form was before my eyes," and again, that's the same Hebrew word for form there. There was silence, then I heard a voice saying," and I won't go through the next several verses, but as I mentioned previously, if you read through that, what you'll see is this, you know, this spirit being is kind of mixing truth with error, you know, to deceive him. Well, a righteous angel wouldn't do that. You know, obviously this is a demon. That's why it has such an eerie description here. But notice how he's talking about, "I saw this form," but he couldn't make out the details. What I want you to see here is, you know, this particular Hebrew word, when it says he saw the form of the Lord, what it's referring to here is God allowed, you know, Moses to see some kind of visual representation of him, where he didn't allow the Israelites to see anything that was a visual representation. That doesn't mean that Moses saw God and saw him in detail and saw his face, because again, we read directly in Exodus 33 where God told him, "You can't see my face and live." Because we have to remember that there's even accounts in the New Testament of individuals saying they see God the Father, but they're not referring to, again, seeing him in detail in a way that's going to violate the numerous, you know, scriptures we read before. They're referring more to a visual representation that they see, you know, in a vision or image that God inspires them to see. And just to see an example of this, turn over to Acts chapter 7. See, it's Acts chapter 7. We're going to break into the account here of the stoning of Stephen, because you're probably familiar with the account. You know, Stephen was a deacon here in the New Testament, and you know he gives a very powerful sermon, you know, to an audience there in Israel, and they're not happy with what they hear him say. In fact, they murder him as a result. They stone him, you know, because they're so angry with what he had to say. But notice the comments he makes in the last few moments of his life. It starts in verse 54. It says, "Then they heard these things. They were cut to the heart, and they gnashed at him with their teeth. But he, being full of the Holy Spirit, gazed into heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God, and said, 'Look, I see the heavens open and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God.'" And notice what Stephen is saying is, "I can see the Father and I can see Christ." Now, obviously, you know, if we compare this with the numerous other statements that we recorded that, you know, John made in his gospel account and even in his first epistle, you know, he makes it very clear. No one has seen, you know, God in his true detail. You know, obviously this is a visionary image that, you know, Stephen is inspired to see, and he's inspired to understand that, you know, God and Christ are encouraging him in the final moments of his life as he's being murdered, you know, by allowing him to see, you know, a visual, you know, image of them. But again, this isn't the same thing as seeing God's face in detail. Because again, that's something that only spirit beings can do. And that's something that we can look forward to, see, you know, being able to see when, you know, if we make it into the resurrection or part of the kingdom of God, you know, that is something we'll be able to see at that point. And we can see that over here in Revelation 22. It's Revelation 22. And we'll pick up here in verse 1. Now, this is part of a description of New Jerusalem. And again, I won't go into all of New Jerusalem in detail. There's a sermon and a study paper on my website, and, you know, the sermons on my YouTube channel as well that goes into New Jerusalem in detail. And basically, as I explained in both of those, you know, New Jerusalem is more of a, you know, spiritual picture, or, you know, a symbolic representation of, you know, the resurrected first fruits, you know, dwelling together in the spirit realm with God the Father and Jesus Christ, and then working with the rest of mankind as they're given their chance, you know, at salvation. You know, that's, you know, kind of encapsulates all the details that you'll see in Revelation 21 and 22. But this is, you know, kind of it's not a literal city. We're referring to a symbolic, you know, representation of a spiritual concept here. But again, this very much is spirit beings dwelling together. But let's notice here in verse 22. It said, "And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the middle of its street and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, and each tree yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were on for the healing of the nations. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall see him. They shall see his face, and his name shall be on their foreheads. And there shall be no light there, and they need no lamp nor light of the sun, for the light of God gives them light, and they shall reign forever and ever." So you can see here, this is clearly a description in the future, and saying, you know, when we make it into the resurrection and we be born into God's family, then we'll actually be able to see the face of God. But as I wanted you to see in this sermon, you know, oftentimes it can be a head scratcher for people, you know, reading these statements of, you know, Moses, well, he talked to God face to face. And then sometimes we can engage in mental gymnastics, you know, and decide, well, this must be, he must be Christ that he's dealing with here. And then we extend that and go, okay, well, then every time that a human being interacts, you know, with a God being in the Bible, well, then that has to always be Jesus Christ, and it can't be God the Father. Well, then you basically just kind of push God the Father pretty much out of the narrative of the Bible, and he's not really interactive with his creation at all. You know, and not only that, but now he can't have a name unique to himself. He can't have any titles unique to himself, because the only way to make the doctrine work is to genericize everything that's attributed to the Father, because that enables you to insert Christ whenever there is an interaction. Now, if you want to study this in a lot more detail, again, as I mentioned, on my website, there's an entire section of study papers that address this. It's basically under the section of, you know, who is the God of the Bible. Because it goes into, you know, not only is there a study paper there called, you know, Hearing and Seeing God, which goes into this whole subject of seeing and hearing God in a lot more detail than I've had time to address in this sermon. But there's also a series of study papers, you know, that go through and kind of dissect and show you, you know, all the different titles, you know, that refer to, you know, God the Father, and these titles that are unique to him. And then if we just stay consistent, you know, with interpreting throughout the Bible, you see God the Father is, again, very interactive with his creation, and he's not someone who's always kind of in the background while Christ does all the hands-on work. And again, if you want to study that in detail, you know, that's all available on my website. And certainly, if you have any questions as you go through that material, you know, everyone is always welcome to contact me directly. Probably the easiest way to get a hold of me is my email address. It's real easy to remember. It's just my name. It's james.smyda, you know, S-M-Y-D-A, @gmail.com. And if you ever forget that, if you just look on my website under the About section, you know, because there's a page there, it's labeled About, kind of tells you a little bit about me. At the bottom of that page, there's a link there with my email address, so you can always contact me there. Well, brethren, with that, I'll wrap up with this subject today. But as I mentioned from the very beginning of this sermon, when we look at the subject of Moses speaking with God face to face, the key to understanding this whole subject is simply understanding that the Bible was not written in English. You know, it's written in Hebrew, you know, and then again, what we have preserved in the New Testament is primarily in Greek manuscripts. But in both cases, you know, this is not written in English. So we have to be aware that, you know, when we read how it's translated in English, that doesn't always convey the exact same meaning that we attach to English phrases today. And if we understand that, then we can really understand what it means that God spoke to Moses face to face.